We're in live from somewhere in southwestern Ontario. It is the Dakota Podcast with Roland Chidiac, thumbs up, and Chris Clough. I have no song. I have no reason to sing. I won't sing at all. There's the intro bumper. Is that smooth enough?
Oh yeah, it's all good. Better than I do every week.
There's no better. There only is. Here's what I want to bait you with. Do you have the going back to school dream?
No, I don't have the going back to school dream.
Well, I'm going to do a TO on it just for a second. Talk about a loaded question, right? Like, do you know exactly what I'm talking about? Like just by those, I probably could have said it far briefer, but you get what I'm talking about, the going back to school dream.
Yep.
So you throw down on that. You're saying you do not have the back to school dream.
I do not have the back to school dream. The only school dreams that I can recall right now, as you say that, are dreams. I've had a couple of dreams in my existence that I can recall where something happens in university. I'm back in university and there's an exam and I'm not there or something like that. And I don't even know why that's entered in because university is long gone, but I do not have the back to school dream. My wife has them. My sister-in-law has them. A lot of teachers I know have them. I do not.
I feel like that's the, I wish we had a call-in show for this one. Like this, I'm having this one moment where I wish we could sort of, you know, someone to say, yeah, I have this dream every year, or for them to be able to sort of like plug it down on a moment. I had
a back to school dream. I will say flat out though, I don't remember it. It was last week actually. And it was a weird kind of mix of the portfolio I was in as of last year and then stuff before that. Cause there were students in the class that were never in the same class together. There was staff walking the halls that, you know, have never worked together. You know, I'd be in one classroom, I'd walk out and it's the hall room from a different school. And then there were people that I'd met online that were like, I want to throw down like somehow Stephen Hurley was walking in the hallway. It wasn't Hurley, but it was something like that. Like just people that would never even have been in any of my school contexts were walking there. And it's interesting because I've never had the dream where I'm all stressed out and the class isn't going well. I used to have, when I was working in hospitality, I used to have hospitality dreams all the time. Just the falling behind on a Friday night, or I show up to work when I was still a server and I'm the only server on, and it's like a 250 seat restaurant. Like one of the restaurants I was working in, I would have those dreams, but I don't recall, but I haven't had the teacher dreams where stuff is just going to pot in the classroom. Like I don't, but I was wondering about that, whether or not you've ever had that sort of late summer going back to school dream.
I don't have the dreams. I have the, like, I'm glad that you brought that up because I wanted to talk today about, I can get into school on Monday. And so basically my head is, I'm already like considering the configuration of packing the car to the maximum ability because I've got junk in my basement. Mm-hmm. And then I'm thinking, what happens if the custodian's not around and I can't get to the elevator? Then I guess I'm taking all those stairs. Like I'm going to work in 2 days to a new school. Number one, I'm hoping that my digital key lets me in. Number two, I'm hoping that it's okay for me to park in a particular place where cars shouldn't be so I can unload the car properly. Number three, I'm hoping I have access to the elevator. And number four, I'm hoping I don't get sidelined by talking to people so I can unload my stuff. Like this is what I'm thinking about. Maybe I'll dream about this tonight or tomorrow night. I don't know. But like I'm already, my head's there. And my head's not here anymore.
I would love to hear from, you know, some of our network when school starts for them. Like what is the
because we came out of the school year, and I know at least in one episode we talked about, when does it feel like you escape, your escape velocity from school? Like, what is it when you actually feel like you're no longer connected to your classroom anymore? And, you know, I'm imagining for some people, it's they have a holiday scheduled at some point, and they know that they're saying, yes, that third week in July, I'm not doing any turning off Twitter. I'm not going to do any planning. I'm not going to do any learning. And then you find out otherwise when they start posting all their learning from somewhere in the Bahamas, right? I saw a crab scuttling across the beach, and it started to make me think about this mathematical thing and this Shakespeare sonnet. Like, it's just the stuff that we mentioned, I think, in the last episode, all the stuff that's been going on in EDU, big topics and kind of smaller topics. There's not too many people in my PLN that haven't continued to post things from their teacher side over the summer. There's been a whole lot of fun stuff, but people are still throwing down their teacher side. So I think there's something about, and this is okay, there's something about August, something that happens in August where different people's lights get turned on and they start to speak more openly about, like what you just said now, going into the school. Like, it is a viable, it wouldn't seem strange for you to walk into the school next week and start doing stuff in your classroom. Maybe first week of August, let's say, if you did have access, might have seen a little bit strange. People are like, geez, like why is Chidiac coming in like the first week of August? Like, we know you have access, but that's a little bit early. And it's funny, I wonder about this, like what feels too early? What feels too early for some people? And there's people that go in. So anyone listening to the podcast, for Roland and I, school starts right after Labor Day, like effectively starts Labor Day. Cause I know that there's early start. Well, for the most part, there's some parts of my, you have early start schools in your board.
When you say early, you mean like before,
like fourth week, August or no. Third week of none, eh?
No, none. None.
What about secondary?
No, not that I know of. I mean, maybe there's an adult education thing
Gotcha. That
I have no idea about. But to my knowledge, all elementary and secondary schools here start the day after Labor Day.
So yeah, we have a couple in our board. We have one that I think started in the second week of August, and it's a specialized school, a sports-based school. I could be misquoting that, but it's noticeably early. First or second week of August, they get rolling. My spouse's school next week is their sort of prep week. Her school starts in the fourth week of August. Like officially the kids are in before Labor Day, and then they get the Labor Day long weekend and they're already in their second week of school. So yeah, we've had conversations in the house about that sort of changing dynamic. Cause previously with both of us being teachers, we were on that same page of kind of trying to figure out how we're both going to go into the school in that last week of August to sort of get prep and get stuff set up. And now we're shifted. That week for her, the prep is the week before that. So the sense of thinking about school crept into our household a little bit earlier than in the past, in the past decade since we've both been teaching. And it's just, you know, it gets in your head. It kind of gets in your head a little bit. Despite the fact we're still 2 weeks out from the start day. I bet you there's some pretty crazy teacher stories out there of individuals, the dreams they have of being in the school. I will say there are some waking nightmares that could happen. And that I have had colleagues that, same thing, chill and calm. And then they go in that first week and their teaching portfolio has been changed. So some of the stuff that they're, and this is at secondary, they were sort of given notice in that prep week. Yeah, we had to switch some stuff around. You're going to be teaching this course, not that course. And that can be pretty crazy. Or you went in, let's say on your prep week, to set up some classrooms and they say, yeah, you're going to have to move everything out because we had to move some scheduling things around. I'm jealous of my elementary colleagues that are able to sort of be in one classroom for the most part.
Well, that happens in elementary where you walk in and you're told, sorry, you're not a grade one anymore. You're a 1-2, or you're not a 1-2, you're a 2 now. That happens. I don't know how much. Like, I don't think it's ever happened to me where there's been such a significant change, but it can happen. I know, and that would be stressful, especially if you spend your whole, not your whole summer, but you give a lot of time to the long range planning of a grade. And then you're told, okay, you're doing this grade. And it's like, well, I just spent, like, there's a lot of go with the flow. I get that, but we can still be frustrated. If I spend my whole summer really getting my head wrapped around the grade two curriculum, and then you walk and you're told, yeah, now you have a 1-2. Okay, well, I had a lot of time 8 weeks ago. I don't have that kind of time anymore. So you feel like you got to jam it in somewhere. And that's never a good feeling. But I mean, that's the reality of it, right? Like, to be honest with you, I think I'd be more stressed out about my move if I didn't have the administration that I have at this new school. I've been reflecting on that a lot and thinking about how that's affecting me in a positive way. Like, I know the vice principal of the school. I've taken leadership courses with her over the years. So I've known her. I knew her when she was a high school teacher, high school department head. And now she's a VP, which is kind of interesting because it changes the relationship, right? Like, she's one of my bosses. So I have to think about that and how it impacts the way I talk to her and stuff at work. And then the principal, I've known him for 7 years because he was the principal of my kid's school. And I feel like I have a good rapport with him. And here's the thing. I've never worked for him before, but I totally trust him and respect him. And so right there, that's huge for me. And I know he's a good dude. So I already just feel calm. I'm like, okay, I'm okay. Like, my bosses are not out to get me. They're both reasonable people. I know them, so I can talk to them. I trust them, so I can tell them if I'm really having an issue with something in the school or if I don't understand something, I don't feel like stupid going to talk to them about it. That's huge for me. The rest, I'm on my own. Like, I don't know a lot of people there. I have no idea how the place operates. That's all going to be new to me. But other moves, I've not felt like this. I felt more on edge. I just want to get my stuff in. Once my stuff is moved in and I kind of have things out and about and in, like, finding homes for places, it's different. It changes. Like I told you, I think I mentioned when we started the podcast at the beginning of this summer, when you return to a school, like in September, and you have the same grade you had the year before, and you know everybody, and it's the same administrator, that's pretty sweet in terms of, like, you really do have the entire summer to not have to concern yourself with thoughts of curriculum and thoughts of relationship. You're off, and then you're back on. But when you move schools, there's a lot of added layers of, you're the new person. You might not know anybody. You're not familiar with the school community at all. You don't know how the place runs. Now, I'm kind of in a neat situation because the administrator is new too. So he is going to have to kind of figure out how this place runs as well, even though he's the one running it. The fact that the VP, this is her second year there, that's really cool because she knows what's going on. And she's got that comfort level that people like me don't. And because I know her and trust her, it's good. I'm okay. I'm good. For me, that, as I've been reflecting on that, that's a huge piece for me. Like, bigger than I had ever thought. It's just one of those situations where it just is what it is, but it's helping me. So right now my head is, I need to move in. I need to move in, and I'm allowed to do that on Monday.
So in a word, if possible, in a word, what is it that you got to have? What is it that you got to have to feel, to begin to feel ready for September? The move in? I know it's two words. Is that like the on ramp for you right there? Moving in is that definite?
I don't know how to put that into one word. All these boxes are in the room and I've emptied them and found a place for my stuff, then my head's more about like, okay, how do we move? What are the kids going to do the first day? And can I throw a wrench into all this? I know we're talking about going back, but like, let's talk for a second about this, what we do when the kids are there. Let's talk about this first week business. Let's talk about this, like, making friends and building relationships, and everybody feels really good the first week, and then they get hammered with the second week and all the work that comes from it. Now, here's my thing on it. And there's been some back and forth on Twitter about how people do this and how it operates, and people are raising these questions. Let me tell you how I've always done it, and then you're free to tell me if I'm right or wrong or whatever. But this is how I... Okay, so in the first part of my career, there was this feeling of everybody else is doing this, so I need to do this too, because I didn't know what to do. Then there's the middle of my career where I kind of went the other way, where I'm like, I'm doing everything on my own. I'm not paying any attention to what other people are doing. And now I'm in this mode of what I call the flexibility. Like, I'm open to what people are doing, but I'm also confident in how I operate. So this is kind of how things have gone the past few years. The first day is very much like, okay, we're all here. And that might take 2 or 3 days of we're all here. And what I mean by that is we get our gear in order. People follow my simple instructions so that we can start to learn how to operate, okay? Some people take the whole week. I've never done that. I've never taken a whole week of that. Some people don't take any of that. They just say, here are your books. We're starting now. Open your book. Follow my lead. We're starting now. Now, having never taught past... Well, that's not true. I've taught 7 and 8, but... The majority of my career has been 1 to 5, and I love to read to my students. So there's always a ton of books, and I read to my students, and then I connect that reading to the learning. And so I find texts, you know, that speak to the moment. So they're not necessarily back to school texts, but they're texts with themes of like anxiety in them, or themes of not feeling so good. And there are some themes of feeling great, but like, generally speaking, it's a reflection of how I'm feeling coming into this new school year. And anybody who knows me knows that it's not my favorite time of the school year. I despise it. I dislike it very much. So having said all that, I enter in, I don't do a lot of like icebreakers and stuff, because I know that some of my class, it's torture for me. It's got to be torture for them. I do other things. I sit down and I like to give them information about me. And if they decide that they want to volunteer and jump in, and there are always students that do because that's who they are, that's great. That's built in. I know that that's probably going to happen. And so there's time for that and there's flexibility, but I try to hit them with stuff about me for the first couple of days. This is who I am. This is what I'm about. This is my family. You'll see pictures of my family on my desk. Look around the room and you'll see stuff in the room that it's me, because you just got here. So there's gonna be time for you to show who you are and for you to be on the walls and pictures of your life around, but you just got here. And so this is me. And then I slowly start to jump into the work. There's no like if on the second, if on the first day I need to create an anchor chart because we need to get something, we need to know how something operates and I need to do it in a chart form, then that's where we start. And it's like, this is called an anchor chart and we're gonna make 1,000 more of these. And this is what their purpose is. This is what Mr. Chidiac does with them. This is what you're going, this is what I expect you're gonna do with them too. And it starts there. So it's not like a week of icebreakers and like stuff that doesn't mean much when you look at it initially. It's like, okay, look, we're here every day, all day from now until the end of June. And I don't expect you to know anything because you just got here and I don't even know you. So that's where we're going to start. But there's none of, I don't have any boundaries on like what always happens is my plans go out the window. I make all these plans and like 80% of them don't happen because other things float into the day. Right, like I'm gonna need to take a tour of this building with the kids. Right, I need to model for them. Like, this is how we go up and down the stairs, and all the, I hate that stuff because in November it should all be just smooth, but there's no smooth in September. Right, they don't know me. I don't know them, and guaranteed, there's always that moment where. The first time something goes wrong in terms of student behavior, in terms of like something they do that rubs me the wrong way or something I do that rubs them the wrong way. And then it's like, it's on like Donkey Kong where they see a side of me that they see the teacher side, if you will. So if we can be stereotypical for a minute, They're gonna be moments in that first week where they're gonna see the May Roland, right? Like I'm gonna be like, whoa, okay, everybody stop what you're doing. Johnny and Jimmy, that's not gonna happen here. We're not tossing things. You're not yelling in the corner because you're upset about something, unless that's part of your IEP. You're not going off in the corner. There are ways to deal with conflict. There are ways to deal with frustration. Let me give you some of those strategies, some of those options that work within a classroom environment, right? Like that's gonna, and I hate it because it comes out because of necessity, right? Like somebody's gonna lose their mind in the corner, but I don't know what their triggers are. I don't know that John is pushing Joe's buttons until I investigate. Because I don't know any of these people. And when I talk to their teachers from last year, I don't know how much they're going to give me. Right. So anyway, long story short, I make it clear on the first day that I am as anxious as some of them may be, but I'm not anxious enough that I'm not going to function. So it's weird. I don't even like explaining it to you doesn't even do it justice. I wish maybe I could have my body camera on me and you could see how it plays out. Because as you know, on past episodes of the podcast, and I don't know if it was on air or off air, but I talked to you about my desire to wear a camera so that people could see the things I was experiencing over the past couple of years and how the frustration builds when you purposely see things that are not acceptable in the environment that we're in at school. And I'm big on that. I'm big on there's a time and place for everything. So if you want to be in a corner screaming your guts out, maybe that's something we do when we get off the bus and we're at home. Maybe that's something we do in the schoolyard where we give you a place where you can scream all you want and everybody knows that's what you do there. But in a room with like 20 other bodies, that's not how we operate. And I do my best to share with them. Part of getting to know me is they get to know me in the different, like I do like a Google slide presentation. Last year, I actually wrote a letter to my students, and it was in a Google Doc. and there were videos, links to videos, and there were images. And so my letter to them is to tell them a little bit about me, and they see different sides of me. They see like the dad side. They see the guy who likes baseball side. They see like a person who enjoys being outdoors and just stuff about me. And then I invite them to slowly give me information about them. But I'm reading the tweets that are perfect, right? They're like, I do this and it works every time. And I'm like, yeah, right. And then I'm reading the tweets where people are like, nah, I just flipped the whole script and everything I do is connected to curriculum. And man, everybody's got their opinion. Everybody does their thing. And what I came out of it with is that, sure, I have my thing. I operate a particular way. But I think I'm open. I'm aware and open to the idea that I don't have to be a certain way. That if I see good practice, I can implement it into my work. If I'm doing something that's obviously not working, it's okay to back off on it, even though I've done it before and it's worked before. So I guess this, what I'm talking about right now, it's like, when you know how I talk about Twitter being a great place for learning, it can also be a horrible place. And right now, all that talk is bothering me. It's like, I don't want to be seeing it. I don't want to be interacting with it. And it's probably because I don't like it. But here's the cool thing too. I'm also taking some of the learning I've done with you over the past year and using some of the things we've referred to, like the doctor who talks about memories and emotions and how you're reflecting on things that have happened to you in the past raise emotions within you, and those emotions trick your brain into thinking that you're still in that negative space that you're not in anymore. And so even from that learning, and even from me talking to you about that stuff and sharing those videos clips with you of the psychology and the biology of things like that, I'm working towards like not reflecting on a negative memory that brings up negative emotions that makes my body feel like it's there again.
What's the word? Is it perseverating? Is that the word? Where you keep cycling through on it.
I don't know.
It's that idea of how you can cycle through anxious moments, and how by not making a decision and just sitting in the emotional part of it, like not adding in any new information, just kind of closing the silo. And I think it's perseverating. That's one of those words that I think, I know it sounds something like that. I don't know if I've ever said it out loud, but it's a powerful, you realize there's a fine line between, okay, let's just assume that I could look it up right now, I guess, but let's assume that perseverating is that keeping an idea in your head and just kind of like ping ponging it around. There's a fine line between that and, let's say, contemplating. So how do you still have that idea, but feel like it's the field that you're running with is a little bit wider, like you don't feel like you're as boxed in. And I would almost say that between the two, the perseverating tends to have, let's say, it could have a higher likelihood of, let's say, raising your anxiety than, let's say, contemplating, where you feel like you have control over the actual thought process. That as far as figuring out what to do next, it's that perseverating, holding on to some of that old stuff that I think can end up crashing your operating system a little bit. Sorry, my sudden thought.
No problem. As you talk about your sudden thought, for some reason, my mind just went to the Star Wars calendar that I used to have up here on my wall. The one that used to be right around here, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to put it back up because it's outdated. Like that, the thing was, dude, it's like 2 years old. Why are you putting it back up? But I found a use for it, talking about going back to school. I'm going to be cutting out all the pictures,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to be placing them in the room just for fun. And instead of like focusing so much on Star Wars, I want to focus on Star Worlds. It's just, it's the primary teacher in me. I'm feeling the primary teacher in me. I've discovered something about me. Here's the thing. When you go back to school, here's the other thing too, right? I'm moving into a room that's got nothing. So I have to put up bulletin boards. And I've already seen from Twitter, some of the teachers that work in this building are rock stars in terms of like they're true teachers when it comes to like making their room look fantastic and having it very like visually appealing. That's not me, dude. Like my class is past the muster, right? Like my principal will be like, okay, looks like a primary classroom, but it's not an all-star level. That used to bother me. It doesn't bother me anymore. I am who I am. I'm going to do things like I'm not going to be living for someone else. I'm living for me. So, but there, I have had some ideas about the themes in my room or the colors that will appear in the way I decorate and stuff like that. That Star Wars calendar has a place in my room, not as a calendar, but as visual prompts, as a way to de-escalate situations that we may find ourselves in. So I'm already, that's the part I enjoy thinking about that stuff, right? Like I'm going to bring something in that means something to me and it can be used for a variety of different reasons depending on the context of the situation. And I love that. So that's kind of my approach with my class and preparing it is that whatever I put on the wall that is not co-created with the students, what value does it have? Because I've been told 1,000 times that the things that go up in your room, there should be a focus on co-creation. There should be a focus on student ownership. So it actually means something to them rather than just decorative. And decorative is fine. I mean, it's just not going to be a room full of like posters that I bought from Scholastic. It's going to be a room where if we need a poster about how to respect each other, then let's make an anchor chart, right? Like that's part of what we do. So let's make it together. Let's put it up there. Let's sign it so that it means something to us. And if there are artistic people in the room, then maybe we can make it look like it came from Scholastic. But that's somebody else's gig, right? Like that's not my gift. But if there's somebody else that has that gift, let's do it. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in there. There's a lot going on in my head, I guess, about this back to school and what the expectations are and how people operate. Like I have to remember that there are going to be people there that have been there for a while, right? So I can't compare my first time there to people who have been there for 10 years. That's not fair. And I won't because I think deep down inside of me, I'll be able to snap out of that quick because I'm not new anymore and I'm kind of comfortable with who I am and the way that I operate in general as a teacher. Like I know my role as a teacher. I know why I'm in education. And so if I stick with that, then all the stuff on the periphery doesn't mean anything, right? It's just when you lose the periphery every now and when you lose your focus, all you have is periphery and you can get caught up in that very easily. And I think it's easy for people to lose focus, especially when they're nervous and they're not feeling confident. So I'm going in with the plan to hold on to what I value the most, be open to what's happening around me. And if I need to adjust, it's okay. But my adjustment needs to continue to have me centered. If I'm bouncing here, bouncing there, look at this, if I keep doing that, look at all the energy I'm expending. But if I see something here and I can bring it back to center, I see something here and I can bring it back to center, it's like that force, it's like gravity. It's just going to keep bringing me back in. And as you know, gravity does its work, whether you like it or not. So I can fight it or I can go with the flow and I can conserve some of that energy that can be used to pull away every now and again when I have to.
I would love to see, and you may see this. How am I going to do this? I would love to, you know, those time lapse videos of the plant growing. I would love to see someone do something similar with their classroom. And it may be one of those cool, you know, to do a 360 video or something where you're posting clips. You probably have to put a couple a day, like it's a big project, but basically what that looks like, what your class, how your classroom, there's that great book. You ever heard the Third Teacher? It's a pretty cool book talking about using your space as part of the learning experience. But I would love to see someone go from sort of soil to seed to plant with their classroom and post pictures so you could see the whole classroom, not just the things that get posted up on the wall. And do you remember there was an app? There was an app, and I think it was Jen Apgar that showed it to me, where you could take, I think you can take a, there's a free version of it too, where you could take a photo and make hot links in it. So in the photo, like you could take a still picture right now. If I took a still picture of you, I could connect a URL to your, as you hover over it, something would pop up on your headphone. Something might pop up on, you know, the handles on the door behind you. And those links would take you to anywhere, whatever you could connect a URL to. It'd be really cool to see that type of an evolution and have students kind of play along with it as well. So it's not only the co-creation of the space that they're in, but a commentary on the actual evolution of the space and how the students are making decisions according to what would be in the room. My first thought. The second thought is, have you ever seen a student, a classroom start with like nothing in the room? Just the desks?
Yeah.
Like, usually. And I'm talking no posters. The books aren't brought in yet. It's actually a blank canvas.
Like when students come in and start?
Yeah.
No, I've not seen that. I mean, I've seen not a lot on the walls, nothing on the bulletin boards. I've seen that. I've actually been part of that. But like not legit 0%.
What if there was nothing in the class? I mean, apart from the functional pieces. So probably have to have some chairs. Maybe not even that. Like how, I wonder if there's anyone in our PLN that, like how bare bones has someone, I would love to see the extreme bare bones that they start with in their classroom. A completely, you know, the kids walk in and it's an empty box, an empty canvas. And what kind of opportunity, if there would be any opportunity. Now, bearing in mind, you have to have some sense of the students coming in ahead of time. So there will be needs. There are some functional, probably some social, probably some emotional needs that you would have to take into account. But when you kind of did that, those ticky boxes, say, okay, I've got all those pieces as a starting point. You know, and this only comes to mind because of what you said about getting the books on the shelves, you know, getting those kind of, and that's for you. That's a seed point for you to start that classroom, creating the collaborative space. I'm wondering about that teacher out there that does none of that. And it's intentional. They don't bring anything in until the students indicate, they gesture, they sort of have this is what we need in order to move forward. A little bit of that in-time delivery. I don't know. I just had that's a little out there segue. Cause I get it. I got stuff here that I'm thinking I have to get it into a space, but that's entirely subjective. Like I have no idea why I would, other than I would love to get out of my basement and I want to put it back in an educational space. Whether it helps or not, I don't know. There's elements of stuff that I've always had on the shelf that I take home in June. I bring back in September. I take it home in June. I bring it back in September. It's not used necessarily that year. I love the, who's it, Jonathan So, that posted that image, all of his resources ready to grab.
Yeah, it was Jonathan.
I actually thought to myself, oh my gosh, that's a whole lot of stuff. That's a whole lot of stuff to have at hand. And it made me wonder about, I can appreciate that. I appreciate resources, but it also made me wonder about the assumptions we make about the students that are coming in. So if all those things are there, ready to grab, what isn't there? What did you miss? What isn't there because the kids aren't actually asking for it? And I get it. There's, again, a lot of the resources on his shelf. I encourage anyone, check out Jonathan So's feeds, his multi-feeds. Well worth sort of following his thoughts and the stuff that he's developing. His picture sparked up that question, though, to me. Though I can appreciate the multi-stack, multi-deep number of resources, what's missing from there? Because there was a lot there. And I've always been caught off guard by not having the thing that I need. Every year, it doesn't matter how much stuff I bring in, I'm still missing something.
And I think he's going to discover that the first time he connects with an educator that says, this is what I need to get to, this is what I need to work on. And he'll be like, oh, let me think about that. And he might be like, oh, I don't have anything about that. Or, you know, it'll be interesting. You should tweet him and just say to him, hey, I'd love to hear from you the first time you're doing your work as a educational coach or instructional coach, and you come across a situation where you don't have the resource or you just don't know where to go.
So let me ask you, is he out of the classroom this semester?
Yes, he is now an instructional coach. Okay. So that's why he set up all his resources are in his basement, I'm assuming, where they're on the shelf.
Yeah.
So that when he goes to work and he is working with a teacher and they say, hey, I'm working on this, I need some help here, can you guide me this way, or whatever they do, then he can grab the resources that he thinks will help that person or lead them to where they need to be. That's his job now.
Okay. I didn't know that part of his context. That's mm-hmm. cool. That's cool. Definitely will be fascinated to hear where. I'm going to send that tweet to him. I'm going to send that tweet to him because we've all been there. I think we've all been there thinking that we have the exact right resources and we don't. We don't. We're missing that thing. And sometimes we don't even know we're missing it until you're reflecting on it afterwards, kind of saying, I wish I had that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Can I put something to you? Just a quick side shift.
Yep.
I love a tweet that came from this dude. Oh, who is he? Let's see if I can find it quick. Mike Reynolds. Not quite sure of his context. His Twitter profile says dad, writer, speaker, cross stitcher. I love that. Learner, Hufflepuff, exploring what masculinity can mean. Also collecting kid drawn tattoos. So that's a pretty, that's an engaging profile. But he put out a tweet. He put out a tweet. Oh, where did it go? Okay. If you're going to use icebreakers for your event or session, fine. I will reluctantly and angrily participate. But then also make sure the extroverts are required to sit in a filled room reading a book for an hour without being allowed to talk to anyone.
And go ahead.
No, I was just saying it. I like the. Okay, so here's it. A lot of different things kind of cracked off on that. Right away, I threw down a kudos. I said, I appreciate that. Because as of lately, and I think when I say lately, this week, I've accepted that I'm an introvert. I don't think I ever had a true sense of it until, you know, you and I have had a few conversations about not the soul searching, but it's self searching. Like, what is it that, I mean, that's kind of like what Decoded is a little bit about, is kind of figuring out, not in the external sense, just of where family and school and things connect, but also myself as the dad, as the brother, as the husband, as the teacher, like where do those things overlap? And in doing so, you know, there's been one or two revelations that I've had this summer about me. Now, whether or not I can sort of execute or action them moving forward, it remains to be seen. But I have discovered new things about me. One of the things I have discovered is that I now accept that I'm an introvert at heart, that the things that drive me, that the motor that drives me to do things is entirely internal. It is internal. And that I do prefer, when making some of those decisions, to do it kind of in isolation with myself. Like I like to walk away from the table. When Mike put out that tweet, I thought it flipped a switch in my brain, thinking back on how professional development is done. Heck, we've even just started talking about icebreakers here as well, what that first week looks like. And I don't recall any intentionality. Like, can you imagine a PD session where they said, okay, we're going to just all just sit collectively in a comfortable space and read an article for an hour? There's this cachet around value, I think, when it comes to being in a classroom, being in a PD session, or being in some sort of conference event, that the more up and the more loud and the more audacious it is, that there's a higher value to it. And, you know, there's a question that I've never heard it asked before, but the question is, you know, would someone feel value in going to paying X amount of dollars to go to an event to be able to just sit and relax and read something in public? Like, is there any value there? It does make me think of, because I retweeted this to, I think, so our board has Quest, which is a big educational conference. And I wondered what it would look like for after having, okay, so first, no keynote gets to talk for an hour. Because I think there's a thing here where you wouldn't necessarily say that sitting for an hour and listening to a keynote is starting to pull away from that sort of introverted kind of a thing. Shorter keynotes, so that then you could leave and go and do some contemplation about what you just learned. And you would have space for that, where it would be a quiet space where you could sit with yourself and kind of just focus on what you just learned. So when that guy's tweet came out, I thought I won't say it's necessarily groundbreaking, because we all need kind of away time from the action time, I think, whether you're introverted or extroverted. But I just like that the words were said out loud. And also, I don't know what the dude's context is. Like, I really don't know exactly who this guy is. And it kind of just jumped into my feed as being, I think it was retweeted by somebody else. But I like that. I like that idea that, you know, and I wonder about in classrooms, I can imagine at secondary leveraging quiet work time or contemplation time might be easier than in an elementary classroom. But I appreciated his tweet.
It's funny that you bring him up, because I saw the same tweet, and probably it has something to do with the algorithms and the fact that I follow you, you follow me, and mm-hmm. you know, whatever you did to it or with it. But I saw it and it caught my eye as well, because it means something to me, because I do consider myself an introvert. I know people would disagree, but people just say to me, oh, you're just shy. You're not, you know, you don't need to refresh your energy like an introvert does. And I'm like, well, I can be shy, but I don't do well with like the extroverted type stuff unless it involves something I'm very passionate about. And then I'm more interested in jumping in and speaking or referring to something or leading something. But yeah, it caught my eye. I saw it. It's funny, because as soon as you said his name, I was like, sounds familiar. And then when you started reading his Twitter profile, I was like, oh yeah, I came across that big time. It's kind of cool that we both were on the same page there, and we hadn't discussed it. We hadn't talked about it until you mentioned it now. So I think that's even cooler.
It does. I get the idea of, and yeah, I mean, I think there's something algorithmic going on here. Definitely. It's, you know, your friend has like this, hey dude, would you think you'd like it too? I mean, it's the meshing within the actual social network that happens, that some people could call the silo, because it does start to close in, everyone kind of seeing the same thing. In this case, I think it can give you a sort of a baseline barometer of feeling connected to others, especially when you come back to the conversation like this and say, yeah, you know, I kind of saw it, and whether you had appreciation, but you get connected without even realizing you're being connected. And even as I say that, I realize that there's a little insidiousness to it, that we're all seeing the same feed. That's for another time. I do wonder about icebreakers, though, when we're designing icebreakers for classrooms, is whether or not we are designing icebreakers with down quiet time as well. I don't know if I've ever actually seen, I don't know if I've seen that. You know, you sort of, that an icebreaker, because I think an icebreaker by nature suggests getting through, well, it depends on how you perceive it. I think if you're saying that it's an icebreaker and you're trying to sort of get through something hard, breaking ice, for some people, they may feel some sense of danger about that because it's the ice that makes them feel like they're stable. Like they actually like that idea that they can count on something and to sort of either be forced out of their comfort zone or to be told that their comfort zone is wrong. There's an interesting little risk there. I think I become contemplative of this as well as because the context I'm moving into some very different programming in September. And that the idea of having, let's say, collective or collaborative icebreakers is going to take some rethinking and some retooling going into working with a special education department. And the different identifications, as well as just the students' contexts, mean that you can't have one style of icebreaker and expect that it's going to bring everyone together. So I think that's also what happened in this tweet with Mike's tweet. It made me reconsider what are the essential elements of an icebreaker. And in putting those essential elements in an icebreaker, am I being inclusive in my approach? I don't know if it's even possible. I don't know. But that tweet got in my head. Yeah.
I wonder what will be next. The next tweet that enters your head.
That gets stuck. Well, they definitely get stuck there once in a while. So.
Well, this is, I want to say that this is the last podcast episode of the true summer. I'm going to call it the true summer because the next time we talk, hopefully I will have been in my school. And yeah. once I'm in, the seal's broken, right? Because my kids will be going to camp and so that I and my wife can get into work. And so this is it for me, dude. Like, this is the last podcast episode 46, Decoded Summer School, where I'm a free man. The next time we talk, I will have been in my school probably 3 or 4 days and unpacking and working away to try to make sense of my new work environment and trying to make my space mine as much as it can be so that I can get into this whole thing.
I'm excited for you, man.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. And I'm working hard. I'm working hard not to let past memories of this experience of being in a new school setting up. I'm working hard to fight with the negative emotions that have come from it because I don't need me to feel like I'm in those places again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like going to work really hard and see if I can manage that. It's cool. I think just being aware of the fact that that's what I've been doing for a long time in my existence. I think being aware of that's going to help me avoid it this time around. I really do.
Yeah. I expect that at least gives you some kind of long range. You'll see it sort of coming at a distance. You'll say, no, I got to kind of shift to avoid that mindset. So, all right, man, off to Saturday.
Yeah. Back to reality. Right.
Yeah. I can hear that. It is the one upside to sort of, I guess, being in the basement where my crappy little studio is that I can hear the floor creaking upstairs. And I mean, I can't tell who it is. Probably it's my daughter. My daughter gets up early too. But I also know when the coffee bug gets in my spouse's head, it's like she's got to get up, grab a coffee. So
I hear you. Okay. Well, enjoy your day. And I'm looking forward to the next time we connect.
For sure, man.
See ya.